with your guts!
I'm back.
You're drunk.
Well,
yeah.
Pal.
Sure, I'm drunk.
You'll be interested to...
You're now listening to Mike Check.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is Kevin. I'm here with a special guest, Bridget Brewster, a.k.a. Aunt Bridge. How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you.
We're here with Josh. Hey. Today we're going to learn and talk about Agape International Mission and what that is, and we're going to get into the details. So for me, Bridge, when we were just talking briefly before, we pulled up an old article from the New York Times from 2017. I know that there was kind of an issue with the organization and I guess its place in the government in Cambodia. There's some tension, if that's right. And I guess the issue is that Agape was being threatened to be kicked out of Cambodia. Is that correct?
It was. But it was started by a false allegation by... he was a member of the ruling party's ministry. I can't remember what position he held, but he was also the head of the journalistic membership committee that they had. Okay. And he had some false information that he just blew up. And after we went under a really stringent, it was really thorough investigation by the government for 3 weeks, they found that all the accusations that he made against us were false, and we were free to keep operating as we did in the country.
Hmm.
And actually, 2 weeks after that happened, the government gave Don a medal of honor of commander, and that's the highest honor given to a civilian in that country for the work that Agape International Missions does do in Cambodia.
Hmm. And this medal, yeah, that was given after, you said, or before?
After,
well.
After we went through that investigation and it was found out it was all false allegations against us.
Because in the New York Times article, it was saying that it was a prime minister asked for the U.S. embassy in Cambodia to do the investigation. Is that who decided that or found that there was some false accusation?
No, the embassy wasn't involved at all. It was just us with all the different ministries involved in the work that we do with ministries of social affairs and women and children's affairs and ministry of education and all kinds of other ministries. There's like 7 different MOUs we have with different agencies of the government.
MOUs being, what are MOUs?
Memorandums of Understanding. Okay. And you have to have them with each ministry of the Cambodian government. And it outlines the work you're going to do and how you do it and how you pay for it.
Okay. And just real quick for our audience who may not know, can you just give us what your position is within the organization and then also Don as well?
I'm a co-founder of the ministry and donor relations as well. Because we do a lot of our fundraising in the States to support our work there. We are supported by all the states and 42 countries.
Amazing. Wow.
Even Hawaii that one time, that Christmas.
Yes, even Hawaii. Yeah.
And now what exactly, if you were to describe AIM to just any person walking by, how would you describe it to that person?
Well, what we do, we are a Christian organization, and before that turns anybody off, because I know a lot of people view Christians as judgy and superior, and God just gave us one job, and that's to love people, and nothing else. Any judgment is reserved for Him, not for us, and our job is to love, and when we see a need, we feel we need to meet those needs. We minister to anybody. It doesn't matter their religion or anything. If they need help, we'll help them. And the primary thing that we feel is that through the church, we're going to end this travesty of human trafficking, especially sex trafficking in Cambodia. Don and I grew up watching the Vietnam-American War on TV. And a lot we didn't realize what was happening, what our country had done, crossing over the border into Cambodia and bombing it. And when we pulled out of Vietnam and out of that area, it just made a perfect breeding ground for what happened to the Khmer Rouge to come in and take over the country. And after that, there's a civil war in Cambodia that really didn't end until like 98, 99. And after our first, we went to a missions, on a missions trip there in, I think it was 03. And just to see how the country was still struggling to come back from all of that. And soon after we were home, there was a Dateline special that showed children for sale in Phnom Penh. And it followed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. And it, what really struck me is it followed an anesthesiologist from the Midwest somewhere who had befriended the cameraman from Dateline. And he was telling him where to go buy the children and how much how much you buy them for and how not to get caught. And this guy was an anesthesiologist. And we found out we were investigating about the problem more. It was just so many Americans were going over there to buy children, and people who were doctors and lawyers and policemen, you know, people who we look to, you think as a safe person.
Yeah, for guidance and leadership and all these great responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we found out about that, we just felt a huge, it really broke our hearts, and we felt really convicted that we needed to do something about it because that's not the America I want represented.
No.
You know, and to the world.
That's why we like Bridge.
Yes.
Thank you, Ken.
Wow. That's powerful stuff. And I mean, it's things like the things that you're mentioning here, it's realities that people need to realize that it's still ongoing. Like, these are still issues that are out in our, and that's going on in our world and that we're seeing every day, but it's not being highlighted. And organizations like yours, I know, are doing their part to put a stop to it. And I know that celebrities in the last couple of years have, I wouldn't want to say like jump on the bandwagon, but they've kind of like, oh, hey, we need to do something about this now. But it's been going on for far too long. So yeah, definitely grateful for people like you and organizations like this.
Thank you.
There's been a lot of things recently, especially in the States, I think, where people are getting these two things conflated of what trafficking is and what sex work is. And I've found out a lot through different research and how some sex workers are facing different adversities because politicians are trying to end sex trafficking, which is great, but they don't have in mind sex workers and what that means. And instead of combating them as two different things, knowing that the two different areas need to be addressed in two separate individual
ways.
That the people who are sex workers for, you know, their salary and their income are sometimes disadvantaged by efforts, you know, fighting sex trafficking. Do you see that happening in Cambodia at all, or is it a different issue for that region?
You know, I think it, wherever you go, sometimes it seems to operate differently. Most of what we see of women who are voluntarily working in brothels and selling themselves, it's because there's nothing else for them to do. Because of the Khmer Rouge and the Civil War, they don't have the education that a lot of developed countries have. And the poverty is just so bad, they feel that they have no other option but to do that. And that's what we try to do through our organization, the girls that we rescue, is we try to equip them with education so they can have a job where they earn a living, where they can support themselves and their families without being tempted to have to go back into selling themselves to make ends meet. And there aren't many jobs like that in Cambodia. And there aren't, and I really don't know how things work in America so much because we've just been so immersed in Cambodia.
Yeah.
But that's a problem, I think, that's over here too. It's a lot of the girls have dropped out of school early, and there just aren't that many jobs in America for people with not a lot of education like there were in the past. Like, how where we were born in upstate New York, IBM was there. It was the birthplace of IBM. And Endicott Johnson was there. Huh. It was shoe manufacturing. And so there were jobs that paid a really good wage to people who hadn't completed high school, or a lot of, we were a refugee settlement area. So after the Vietnam War, there's a lot of Vietnamese refugees that came, and they could work in those places and earn a great living where they bought houses and could care for their families without even being fluent in English yet.
Wow. And now you have, I guess, Agape in the past few years, you guys have been able to get some of the, what would you call the children that you guys are able to rescue? I guess what would be a proper name for these? Because I don't want to just say the kids or the whoever.
I don't know. We just call
them.
Survivors?
Just call them by their individual names.
Names, like, yeah. There are girls, and we call them survivors.
Okay. Yeah, I see on the website, yeah. Survivors.
And really what they've gone on to be is, we've been open since 2005. The ones that have gotten older, they've become modern day abolitionists, and they're looking to change things and to help get other girls, you know, rescued out or educate them about how to avoid getting tricked into trafficking situations.
And you're able to get them in the U.S. and get them visas and go to school and all that, from what I recall?
I know there's a handful. Just a handful. And they got a special T visa because they testified at their perpetrator's trial. So that's how they got to come to America. But because of the way things now with immigration and everything, it's tough for anybody trying to immigrate out of Cambodia to America. So we just have those few lucky ones that were granted the special T visa because they came and testified.
Was that early on? Was that early on? Early on in Agape, or was that fairly recent?
They were in trial. I think it was 11, 12 years ago. Okay. They came to testify in L.A. I don't know if I can say his name because he's coming up for retrial. There was
a Marine officer, wasn't there?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Is that the one?
He's getting retried because the jury wasn't told. The way the PROTECT Act law worked, that you had to prove that if somebody traveled there to have sex with a minor, they could be prosecuted under that law. And they changed the wording that he wasn't traveling, he was living there because he had a house. So it's just that little difference in the wording. He's being retried in October. And the girls will have to testify all over again because he was convicted. It's not that he didn't do it. It's agreed that he did it, but it was because the jurors weren't told that he was living there he had just traveled going back and forth.
That's
so a little crazy.
That's incredible.
That's incredible that it makes a difference, but I'll hold my opinion on that.
So another thing that I was looking into was this issue of trying to discredit CNN, who I guess originally reported, I guess it was a report that ended up being Vietnamese girls, and there was kind of an uproar. I won't say the prime minister, but some Cambodians felt like it was very political, that it wasn't it wasn't Cambodian girls, it was Vietnamese girls, and Cambodian mothers wouldn't do that, and trafficking doesn't exist in Cambodia, and trying to paint this picture that, you know, trafficking is eradicated there and it's a thing of the past. How do you guys deal with that there?
Well, we stay out of the politics.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
And we find we have our own SWAT team that does go in and do rescues. And if you go on our website, you'll see that they are still rescuing underage girls, and it's still happening. The problem has not been eradicated. Mm-hmm. Recently, we had an 8-year-old was one of the youngest that was rescued. So the problem is still there. And like all evil businesses that keeps evolving and changing, trying to avoid detection. Mm-hmm. So, sorry, I had to cough.
That's okay. There was there's something that I read talking about. It was trying to lay out the differences between sex work, trafficking, and then also migrant work, that there are all these different shades of, you know, these kind of nefarious things going on. And I think we touched on it a little bit of some of the girls feeling like they don't have an option because of educational and economic opportunities and these different things. And part of the research was saying that some women who end up going to foreign countries outside of their own home countries looking for some work that they're promised, saying there's going to be some job for you in whatever country. And they get there, they get coerced, and they end up being sold into trafficking. But then some governments or organizations are able to get them back to their home country. But some of the findings said that some of these women who were sent back to their home countries almost were under worse conditions because they were treated as if they were prostitutes, even though before they left, they thought that they were going to do a real job. So they'd almost prefer to stay in that country that they were being kind of, you know, victimized there. And it raised a concern for me of just thinking, like, how do you tackle such complex issues, and kind of what's that mental state for these victims who are trying to figure out what's best for them? And is that something that you guys help them kind of navigate?
Yeah, it is something that needs to be dealt with. It's like changing one heart at a time, changing their opinion about, and I think we find it here in America when girls have been trafficked or in prostitution situations, is that they're garbage, they're trash, mm-hmm. and they're not. You know, because we're Christian, we use the precepts of Christ's teachings and tell them that, you know, God reveres children and he had a plan for their lives, and it wasn't this.
Yeah.
And in Southeast Asia, women in particular considered secondary citizens. And there's a Cambodian proverb that goes that men are of gold and women are of cloth, meaning that gold never loses its value no matter what you do to it. It can get dirty and hammered into different shapes and everything. But a woman, if she, she's like a cloth. So if anything bad happens to her, she's stained. And a cloth is, once it's stained, you don't want to wear that item, and you just toss it out and it just disintegrates. And to educate people about that women have value and they need to be treated with respect, it is a battle. And what we find too, in that culture that we work in over there, that the shame is on the girl. It's not on the parent or the trafficker that did this to her. And getting her to realize that, you know, this, none of this was her fault.
Right.
And the shame is on them, to the parents who sold them, and or the traffickers that tricked the families and the traffickers that sold them.
Right.
So it's just changing a heart, one heart at a time, in the mindset, and educating people about that. Because so many people consider girls that have been trafficked, or girls and women in prostitution, that they're throwaways. And they're not. They're treasured. They're treasured like everybody else is and should be.
And it's a shame. I was watching this movie. I don't know if you heard of it. It's called The Square. And it was more of an artsy movie, but there was this recurring theme throughout of there are a lot of beggars on the street. And then there is constantly throughout the movie, there is this a voice someone had a billboard, or she kept asking and saying, do you or will you or do you want to save a human life today? And it showed the crowd just walking by them and not listening to this woman. And she kept reiterating, do you want to save a human life today? And throughout the movie, it makes you think, you know, it's not just a homeless person asking for money. The question there is, do you want to save a human life? And there's dignity there. There is an actual person who has life, who is still there.
Yes.
You know, they're not worthless. They're alive. Mm-hmm. They can be helped. They want help. Yes. They need help. And why can't we just you know, give them something that we even want them to have. Because sometimes people get upset at seeing, you know, homeless people or disadvantaged people. And there's that subconscious thing of like, why can't you just be better? Why can't you just be more normal like me? But then it's like, okay, they're trying, they're doing their best. So let's help them.
Yeah. So how does post you had the investigation and the organization had the investigation in 2017, correct? 2017? Is that what you said? Was it
2 years?
That's just when the article
came out.
Yeah.
All right. So, aside from that, how has the community support been? So in the areas that you go and conduct these raids, what is the response that you typically or normally get from the community? And then does it support your cause and does it, assist your mission, or does it kind of, what's the situation there?
Well, initially they did not welcome us with open arms because they knew we were coming in to mess with their source of living. So it was a little difficult at first, and there were threats made mostly on our staff. But we told them, you know, we're here to help, not to hurt. And it's really amazing what has happened in the 10 years that we've been living. No, I guess it's 12 years now. We've been living in Soi Phoc because that was the hub of trafficking of young girls throughout Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And we came in and we started with a kids club where it was like a vacation Bible camp. It was just a time of hearing a Bible story, and then there was arts and crafts time and games time, and then the kids got a snack. And when we were putting up posters and we were moving into the community with that, the police would come right after us and take those signs down and tell the parents, don't let your kids go there because that's a bad organization. Oh. And we just, it was really difficult at first. They just didn't want us there.
So you had to build up the rapport and trust.
Yeah. And the kids had a good time. And a lot of times they said, the only thing we came for was the food. And we gave them a healthy snack. And, you know, and sometimes, because it's such a poor community and a poor country, sometimes that was the only thing the kids did eat that day. And then we started a free health clinic, and we started the church. We started a school. The Lord's Gym. And we started two employment centers in the community, where and one of the employment centers is exclusively for girls rescued out of trafficking. And the other one is for the community, like people who are at risk. Even we have some people who we know they're selling drugs at night, but it's a job for them during the day.
Uh-huh.
And we employ men in that employment center, driving trucks and security and things like that. Uh-huh. And along with getting all this development, we have teams that come over to visit our ministry. We have about 40 teams that come a year. And so they want to have snacks and drinks. So there's been pop-up food shops. Mm-hmm. And then having the Lord's Gym, an outreach to the men, like we found jobs in construction for some of these guys. A lot of them are, they're kickboxing. So it's televised every weekend, and they become like heroes because everybody loves to see them on TV. And
right.
They get paid whether they win or lose. And some of those guys now are working as security guards for our different locations that we have ministry at. And we have two national champions out of that gym.
Oh, wow. Because out there, kickboxing is a big deal, right? In that area.
It's a very big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Don't mess around with those guys.
It's just so great to see, because some of these guys did traffic in women, some trafficked drugs, and some were just poor and just good guys. But to see the change in these guys going from thinking, you know, not respecting women and children, and see them being protectors of women and children, and then seeing them how they care for the community. It's just been amazing.
It goes both ways, I'd say, you know, just in the United States, of the whole freedom of speech. But what people forget about is the side of speech that people don't appreciate. And then understanding that the things that they don't appreciate also sometimes holds the same value of freedom as the side that favors them, as with, you know, the victims and the girls that you want to help and that deserves the help. But then it's easy to forget about, you know, the people you don't agree with. But then, you know, a conservative might say, well, what about the other side? Do they not matter? And is the girl who's being saved, does she matter any more or less than these other people? Some people might say, of course, 100%. But then at the end of the day, you know, we're still talking about that human dignity, that everyone is, you know, savable and can change. So I think it's great to hear that you guys are trying to work with those other people, because in order to stop this kind of this crisis is to fix a solution. But then it's like, well, how do you fix it? Is it poverty? Is it poor education? Is it mistrust? Is it, you know, there are so many angles that you have to tackle this on, which is...
Yeah, you have to consider a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's crazy.
It is a crazy world. And we're in the belief that, you know, you can have... We have great education here in America. And we have so many different organizations reaching out to help people. But it's, we just really believe it is the love of Christ that flows through us that really helps and makes a difference.
Amen.
I just want to ask you one more follow-up question to the question I just had previously, Bridget. What challenges or what things do you believe you'll have upcoming, or challenges that you're currently facing now? Is there anything that is either blocking the mission or preventing the mission from being complete?
No, you know, we've really just been experiencing steady growth and steady favor with the government.
That's awesome.
And how we're able to operate. One of the biggest things, I think, is keeping funding coming in. And that's why we're working on building a product and a name brand, because our girls make awesome products. They have mad sewing skills and they make jewelry. And it's just getting the word out, because we have a good story. And we just need more sales for these girls. That it would help just pay for the ministry, because right now our budget is $8 million a year. And it's just trying to keep money coming in to keep supporting that, because a lot of people, they like to put their name to a project or to a building or something, but to pay for the ongoing support for the girls for their education every month and their health care and staff costs and all that. It's not as glamorous as getting your name attached to a big project or a building.
What are the ways that can the organization can be currently funded? By donations on the website, and are there any other ways currently aside from donations?
Yeah, there's donations that you can make on our website, or when you purchase an item that one of our girls have made, you're buying freedom for them and keeping them free.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, you'll pay a little more for our items, but you're paying for their freedom and their dignity.
That's a brand right there.
Yeah, I was going to say that's some creative marketing there, which is really great, because that's
working
honestly.
We're working on it.
Yeah, that's honestly what it is people trying to, you know, take that thought out of, oh, well, it's my hard-earned money. It's like, okay, well, how can we reframe this? Do you want to – it's not you're giving money. It's you're helping someone have a better life, and it's like getting that message across of – because everyone wants to help people. No one wants to put others in harm and keep them in harm. So it's just finding that way. So I'm glad that we're able to talk to you. I know it wasn't a long time. But the name of your website, where people can donate at, would you want to direct them to the website and any area of the website that they can look and find?
Please. Thank you. Yes, it's agapewebsite.org, AGAPEWEBSITE. And there's different ways that you can click on to support, or there's ideas of how to get involved. And also it'll give you a link to our AIM shop as well. So I really appreciate you being interested in this and caring about this and just letting me talk a little bit about this, about what we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were thrilled to have you. And like I said, I wish we could have talked for a few more hours.
at least an hour.
Well, anyways, thank you, Bridge, for coming on, and tell Don I said hello and everybody.
Okay.
Hope you have the best day ever.
Well, thanks. You guys too. And I'd be interested in coming back anytime you'd have me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Bridget.
I'm already writing it down, and hopefully we can get that done soon. I'm already looking forward to it. So, awesome. Yeah. We're just going to...
Okay, I hope I see you soon.
Thank you, Bridge. I'll talk to you soon.
Kevin, go make a visit.
I'm trying to. Either. They wouldn't... I tried it many years ago. They didn't let me, but not you guys, but the military didn't let me. They said, Cambodia, I don't know about that place. And like, I'm going there for Thanksgiving, guys. Let me just have a meal. Come on.
Time for a road trip, guys.
Yeah. Well, thank you to the audience for listening. And we're excited to get more news out to you. And hopefully you guys enjoyed what you heard. If you have any questions, talk to us on Instagram, on Facebook, all that good stuff. Read the blog coming out. Yeah,
hit us up.
Let us know any thoughts. If you have stuff for Bridget that you'd like to ask, any kind of additional details or how to get involved, let us know. Anyways, thank you again for listening. This is Kevin Klein. This is Mike Check, and I'm out.
All right, we out.